24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Keep it
locked. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. This is David Spradley, and you should check out Z, the SEO queen.
Do you have an online business or want an online business but lack the team or the expertise to get on Google Page 1? Did you know that 33% of all Google search traffic clicks the first result only? Do you want to get more traffic to your website, social media profile, or just want your video to get more hits or go viral? Well, you need to contact the SEO Queen Digital Marketing Agency, where you are more than just a number. You can't lose with the SEO Queen. More visibility, more credibility, more profitability. Visit theseoqueen.net for more information. That's theseoqueen.net. theseoqueen.net. That's theseoqueen.net. That's theseoqueen.net.
Hello, this is Lady Z, the violinist. I'm coming to you because I want to encourage you to get your copy of Elevate. It's available on Apple Music and iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. So if you're listening to this on your computer or your cell phone, whether you have an Android or an iPhone, you can get your copy of this song, this show's theme song, by just going to Apple Music, Amazon, or Google Play and get it today. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
This is David Spradley, and you're listening to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z.
Technology, music, and business on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. The Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music and learn the secrets to music and technological success. Please follow us online at www.ladyz.com and on all social networks at Lady Z. My next guest is a fellow MIT alumni, an off-Broadway show producer, composer, lyricist, and more. It's none other than Jazz and Tech Lounge alumni, Seth Bisonhurst. How are you today?
I'm good. It's so good to be back. You have a lot of things to say at the beginning of your podcast there.
I do. I have quite a few things to say, but
maybe I'm doing my podcast wrong because I just literally say, "Here I am. I'm back again."
Well, you know, every podcast is different, and that's just how you know we roll here on the Jazz and Tech Lounge. So, what is new with you?
Oh, geez. Well, I have a show off Broadway, and that's all I did for the last month, and it's all I'll be doing for the next month while we get the show off the ground and hopefully start to build a following so that I don't have to harass all my Facebook friends individually to come to the show this weekend. That's
What's the name of your show?
Oh, that's something I should have said. It's called Love Quirk. It's about those little quirks that keep you from achieving the love that you deserve. So it's about these four characters in their early to mid-30s, and they are stuck in the patterns of their lives, and they need to figure out what love quirks are holding them back. And through the show, they learn a lot about themselves and each other so that they can finally be open to love. And I think a lot of us have that moment in our life where we have an epiphany sometime in our, you know, mid-30s where we feel like this is what's been holding me back, whether it's in love or in career or whatever. And you're like, aha, I need to just break out of this pattern. And then that allows you to finally find happiness.
Harboring hidden habits is an unknown.
Dating in New York can be tough because, one, everyone's super busy. Everyone's got something going on. And two, everyone's after their own thing. So it's hard to find someone you're a match with, who you agree with, and you're both going to be after the same goals or supporting each other's goals.
The show is a very lighthearted and accurate look at what it's like to date now.
It's funny, it's sweet, and I think everybody in the audience will have at least one moment, if not more, to relate to any person up there on stage at any given moment.
We look at every scenario of each character, and I can list off people in my life that I met in New York City that have gone through these experiences. This truly is a slice of life. And I think you will see somebody that you know in this show. These are the people you see on the subway or meet in a bar.
Oh, wow. So what theater is the show playing at?
The show is at the St. Luke's Theater on 46th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. It's really much closer to 8th. We're on the marquee and everything. It's really quite exciting to be in a legit off-Broadway theater. The show has been 10 years in the making, and to finally arrive in New York City and say, we are off Broadway, it's just been the thrill of a lifetime.
Wow. So that's pretty awesome. So 10 years in the making. When did you first come up with the idea for Love Quirks? Describe to me the
well,
of the show.
I'll tell you, I've been writing cabarets for a very long time. People outside of New York don't really get what a cabaret is. They think it's a movie with Liza Minnelli, which it is, but the cabaret venue has been around for a very long time. It started in like the Germany in the 30s, but you basically, it's like you sing songs and you tell a story and you do some banter or patter about your life, and it just kind of combines a concert with some stand-up, maybe you tell some funny stories, and it's just this weird thing that mostly only exists in New York City right now, and I've been doing those for almost 20 years at this point. And so I write these novelty comedy songs or ballads, and I used to put together evenings where I would group the songs by topics and then just tell a little story about why I wrote the song. And so I ended up with about 200 songs that I've written, and some of the songs in Love Quirks were actually written about, a lot of them were written about real situations in my life. A majority of the original songs were, and then there are songs I wrote for various friends who would come over. Like one of the songs, This Is Awkward, it's about a girl who has to go back in to the bar where she worked after having a one-night stand with the bartender, which is something a lot of people can relate to, having had done it. And I was like, this is totally a song. And another song came out of my friend just seeing somebody across the street and being like, I wonder if he's straight or gay. And she was like, hey, you know, sexy man. And I was like, hey, that's the name of a song. And I wrote that one in 10 minutes. Another one are based on relationships I've had, either love songs I've written or breakup songs I used to write mostly out of necessity when I started writing. It was an emotional crutch, and I wrote a lot of songs just that I had to get out of my soul, which the finale in Love is one of those songs. So I had been doing, like, I think I had 7 cabaret acts at the time. And I started doing these concerts with Broadway stars singing my songs for charity. We did Broadway, yes, the Humane Society, Broadway Camp for City Harvest. And I found that the Broadway stars would always gravitate towards the same quirky love songs. Like, those were my most popular ones. And I think that's because love
is the most universal human emotion. And I was just walking down the street one day, and song cycles were very popular in 2010. And I said, well, I could easily do a song cycle. It's literally a cabaret without any talking. Like, I already have the song. So I was talking to my friend on the phone, and I was like, everyone loves my quirky love songs. I should just do an evening and call it Quirky Love Songs. And then I was like, or Love Quirks. And I was like, I like that. I like that. Love Quirks. That's great. So I wrote the catchy title song for that. And then I developed it as a four-person piece with Brian Childers, who was in the original song cycle. And he became the director and kind of co-conceiver of the show. And he and I worked together to figure out what was missing. And we cut some songs that didn't quite fit what we were doing. And I wrote some new songs. Then we did a great four-person review in 2011 of the show, and my friends who came were like, we want to know more about these characters, they're so interesting. And so Brian brought in his brother Mark Childers, and somehow he was able to take the songs and figure out a story, because the characters, I think, were so clear and authentic, because they were all based on real people. So he said, well, I'm going to pull in my life and my friend's life. And so everything in our show is based on actual events that have happened to us or people in the show or people we know. And I think that's why audiences really relate to it, because these are three-dimensional characters. They are not the typical caricatures that you see in a lot of shows, especially TV shows. These are well-defined people that you know, and you'll either see yourself in it or you'll recognize one of your friends in them. And so since 2011, we have spent years rewriting the script and adding songs, taking out songs, revising lyrics, to the point where we have gone over every word in the script and every lyric in the script with a fine-tooth comb. We're on our 26th draft of the show is what we're presenting right now. And
26th
we did the reading.
Draft?
26 drafts over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, it takes hard work and persistence. You know, like, you can get a show up faster, but then it's like a mediocre show. And a lot, I mean, I'm not going to say bad things about particular shows, but in general, if the show got up and it didn't take 10 years, there's probably a level of mediocrity to it, because you have to chisel away and work so hard to get a show to be the quality, like, you know, every single like show I admire took at least 10 years. And I think that that's just the fact of the matter, is you just keep working on the show and you just keep buckling down, and we make sure every line is right for the character, every lyric is right for the character in the songs, every lyric has to scan properly rhythm wise. And the verses have to match rhythm-wise, so you have to be careful about scanting. You have to make sure all the rhymes are perfect rhymes, or it takes the listener out of the show, and they go, oh, that didn't quite rhyme, and that's not good. You want everyone to stay in the show, and it all has to be character-based and story-based. And so, you know, some of the songs that I wrote originally have remained intact because they were written about such specific people, and they became the characters, so they still work. But there is not a single song in the show that hasn't had at least a few words changed over the course of us. And my father saw it the other day, and he had we had done a three-week run in 2014 off-Broadway, and my father, you know, was like, you know, I see how you improved it. He said that the songs and the story were so cohesive now. He said originally, you know, it worked, but he was like, it was remarkable how well you got the songs and the script to work together this time. And my mom was like, wow, it was good. And she doesn't like anything. So, like, I think she liked it last time, but this time she was like way more effusive. And she was like, it was perfect now. And like, my mom is a critic more than my dad, but so I feel like
your mom sounds
reading.
Like my dad is a bigger critic than my mom. Absolutely. I get
Well, I mean, she sees a lot of theater, so like, she's a real theater person. She goes to many shows, so to have her stamp of approval. I wanted to put that in all our press materials, like that the composer's mom thought it was really good and she's really picky. But I was outvoted because apparently some people's moms are not picky and they wouldn't understand that my mom really hates everything.
There's buzzing in the line.
Hello?
Can you hear me? I can barely hear you.
I hear you perfectly.
You hear me perfectly?
Yeah, I hope it's not my microphone thing.
That is so weird. Hold on. I don't know why.
Should I get off of the microphone thing?
Okay, now it's clear.
Oh, I don't know. Did we miss anything I was saying? Do I need to repeat anything?
Yeah, repeat what you were saying.
Oh, no. From where?
About your mom. We were talking about your mom when it started. You were outvoted.
Yeah, so basically, my father was like, this is so much more cohesive than it was. He was really impressed, and he even said he was proud, which was nice to hear. And he said that the book and the script have really come a long way, that they now really work together as a full piece. And it's like some of the songs really haven't changed that much because they were written about such specific people that became the characters. But a lot of the songs I've had to tweak lyrically and really rethink about certain sections of it. And I never, you know, enjoy rewriting, but I don't shy away from it. And we work as a team now. But I think it was a good sign that my mom said she actually liked it this time, because I think she liked it originally, but this time she was way more effusive and she was like, it's perfect. And I wanted to put that in our press material. You know, I wanted to say like, Seth's mom thinks it's perfect. And people were like, well, people won't know that your mom hates everything. And I was like, let's put that in too. Seth's mom, who usually hates everything, said this show is perfect. Because that is like, I think it's harder to get my mom's approval than the New York Times, you know? But I was outvoted on that because I think some people have moms who are supportive and they wouldn't relate to that at all.
Right. So, like, let's go back to the process of developing Love Quirks, developing the show. Like, when you tweet the book and the song, what was that process like? How did you know it needed
Gosh, so much to tweet. I thought you said tweet for a second, and I was like, I don't tweet. I'm not a millennial. it takes a lot because you put it up, and you think it works on paper, and then the actors come in, and sometimes they'll be like, this just happened a week ago, actually. A song that I had written, like, in 2005 that was still in the show, and has never been really changed lyric-wise. The actress was like, I don't think my character would say these lines. And we looked at it and we were like, it never occurred to us because it's been that way for so long. You need the fresh eyes. We have a fresh actress. And she was like, I think that this is not how she would be now. And we all agreed. And so I rewrote the lines and I made them hopefully they're a little bit more modern, a little bit, I think they're funnier now, I hope. And it's good, that's what you need. It's always a collaboration. At every stage of the game, we would have postmortems with the actors and we would get their feedback as to what they thought was and was not working for their character and make sure that every character has clear motivations. And then if for some reason the song, it just isn't working, then you know, they had to say, we're cutting this song. And I don't like cutting songs. It's like killing your babies. Like, it's hard. I mean, I guess someone's got to do it. But, like, it's, like, very frustrating to be like, I worked so hard on this song, and now we're not going to have it in the show anymore. But I've gotten better. And I think that's helped with time, too, because the last time we took a few years, you know, we took a few years off of the show before I brought it back in 2019. And I did my sitcom pilot, and I wrote another musical. And I'm working on a movie musical right now. And I was like, you know what? I have room in my schedule. Oh, I was doing stand-up and improv and acting for a bit. But in the summer, I was like, you know what? My fall 2019 is open. I think I'm going to bring the show back. And when we brought it back, it's been so many years that I'm no longer so emotionally invested in the song. I could see it from a different standpoint. And I think right. the same one for Mark and the book. And he can see, you know what, there used to be two Buffy references in the show. And we did the reading and they did not get any laughs. And I looked at Mark, I said, I don't think people watch Buffy anymore. So we had to cut the Buffy references. And we basically cut most references that didn't last for 5 years. And we didn't add any that only work for today. Like, we specifically tried to only keep references into the show that 20 years from now, people will still know what the reference is. Because we don't want the show to ever feel dated. Because right. it's about people in the city who are in love and who want to be in love. And that is timeless. And that, I think, is
right.
another thing we very much focused on, making the show timeless. And also not completely New York City centric, so that when it's done in Boston or Atlanta or, you know, in London,
LA.
Sydney, Australia, LA would be great. Like, we want the show to translate really well. So we have taken out some of that stuff, and we have, you know, we want the show to be relatable and authentic no matter what, while still being, the emotions are specific, right? You need to be specific to be universal. So all the emotional things are specific, but we lost any references that tied the show to 2014, which is when we had done it, and we tried not to add any that would tie the show to 2020.
Gotcha. So what have you learned through this process as you're, you know, getting a show off Broadway, which is a huge accomplishment? What are the top three lessons that you have taken away from this process, this journey?
Well, I'm starting to tear up. You can't see it because we're not on video, but I'm like crying just when you're asking the question. It takes a lot of time. I never ever imagined how much time it would take. I thought in 2011 we had a great product and we were just gonna put it up, and we could have, and it would have failed because it was not ready. And in 2014 I thought, we did this 3-week run, we should move it, it's so good. And it was good, but it was not ready. And it just, a lot of life happened in the past 5 years since that time, that we aged the characters up, we gave one of them a divorce, and it just, the show worked so much better. It's no longer a trivial show about people in their 20s. It's now about people in their 30s who are trying to figure out what that love quirk is that has been holding them back from finding their true happiness. And I think especially in New York City, in your mid-30s, you have a lot of reckoning. I mean, I know some people still get married in their 20s, but a lot of those people end up divorced, like one of the characters in our show. And like, I feel like the biggest lesson is it took a lot more time, and it took a widening of the team, and finally finding someone to come in to help produce the show who had a lot of experience. Like, I brought in Tom Dangora, who is a wonderful, amazing off-Broadway producer, general manager. Him and his husband Michael mm-hmm. have come in, and we were lacking their business savvy. You know, we needed their business savvy to come in and to say, this is how you do everything. It was a lot of tutelage, you know. I needed that. We were missing. I always knew how everything worked in theory, but to have somebody on the team who knows the reality has been very helpful. And I think those two things. And then third, it's not being afraid to ask your community and your friends and your family for support. And just you know, I went to everybody I'd ever met from college and MIT and all my high school friends, and I targeted people who weren't in theater, because obviously people in theater don't have stability. But I targeted people I know who had, and here's another thing, like, we're all, you know, about 40 now, and people who we went to college with are very successful, and they've seen you struggle and persist, and you just got to ask. And not everybody said yes, and a lot of people ignored me, but if it wasn't for the support of that base of MIT people, mostly MIT people, this show would never have happened. And just to have the gratitude towards those people and to have the guts to just ask, just to say, hey, I need your help. Will you join me on this journey of moving the show off Broadway? It's a huge risk. It is a very expensive endeavor. And, you know, we're gambling that the show will pick up traction, we'll get hopefully some good reviews and some word of mouth. The buzz has been incredible. I'm sure you've seen on our social media at LoveQuirt on Instagram, Facebook,
right,
and Twitter at LoveQuirt. We have a wonderful marketing team. We have lovely videos coming out once a week now. And our pictures, I think the content we're generating is fantastic. People are starting to hear about it. And the goal is just to build our audience before, you know, we run out of money, basically. That's the goal. So we don't know what's going to happen. You know, it is very scary out there. There's a coronavirus. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes, I've heard about it.
I'm worried. That was a joke. I think everyone's heard about it. I'm worried that could eat into the ticket sales, you know, but like I can't control that, you know, like all we can do is remain grateful and humble that we were given this opportunity. And it's a daily struggle for me to remain positive because I'm Jewish and I like to complain about things, and the negativity feeds my songs and my stand-up and my sitcom especially. But I'm trying really hard every day to wake up and be grateful for the fact that the show is happening, that we are off Broadway, that the audiences are standing almost every night. Sometimes the matinees, they want to stand. My father said they wanted to stand. They just couldn't stand that fast because, you know, the matinee audience is a little older. But everyone seems to really like the show. Like, we have 4.5 stars on Gold Star right now, which is almost 5. It rounds up to 5. And those are strangers who are liking the show. So I feel like the show was very – the box office guy said to me that he thought the show was wonderful, and he's only heard snippets of it. He said, you know, I've heard a lot of shows, and I can tell just from what I've heard that your show is wonderful.
That's amazing.
He said to me that the product is important. And, you know, it's true in any industry that – the most important thing is your marketing, marketing, marketing. But at the end of the day, I mean, in politics too, it's like Bloomberg was marketing, 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 but the product was not something people wanted, right?
Right.
So we have a product that people want. People love the show. People are falling in love with the show. I had a group of my high school groupies come, and they were almost falling off their chairs. They were laughing so much. And they, you know, they're spreading it via Snapchat and TikTok and Instagram or whatever kids are doing. And they loved it. And yet, then the boomers come to the matinees, and they are, like, so nostalgic. Like, my aunt was like, wow, it reminds me of my divorce. There's a divorce in the show. She related to that. She was like, I just totally understood where she was coming from because I've been there. And that's what people are saying. You know, people are going, I totally relate to these characters. I totally know someone like this. I totally am like this because so many of the songs are from my personal experience or Mark or the cast, like, or our friends. It's all grounded in a reality. And I'm just trying to just be positive about the fact that even if it only runs a minute, which is a Sondheim quote that most people won't get, we did it. You know, we are part of everything. We are off Broadway. We are going to endeavor. We're going to do a cast recording. I'm hoping we can get a company to distribute it. And I'm hoping we can get the show right.
Can you say that one more time? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I'm hoping that, you know, we find a company to release the cast recording, but we're going in to record it in a few weeks. And hopefully we will find a licensing company that sees the potential.
Okay, that sounds amazing. Well, how can people buy tickets and learn more about the musical Love Quirks?
Yeah, loveQuirks.com, LoveQuirks.com. Tickets are on telecharge. And I think people will really like the show. Everyone has really liked the show. We're just trying to get the awareness. Hello? Oh, no, I accidentally clicked mute.
Oh, okay.
I'm horrible with technology. Yeah, so I was saying, I took you out of the headphones because those were creating a buzz, I think, because I had hand sanitized them, and I think I might have broke them. But, yes, go to loveQuirks.com, get your tickets. We're just trying to get the word out there to people who love, who love musicals, who love musicals about love. The show is for anyone who's ever been in love or wanted to be in love, and it will make you laugh. It will make you tear up, maybe cry if you're a Pisces. And you will have
really, it'll make you cry if you're Pisces.
Yeah, I cry all the time. I cried 3 times in this phone conversation. It's because I'm a Pisces. Water signs are very quick to cry. But I think the show is charming. And it's, you know, don't take my word for it. That's a Reading Rainbow thing. Don't take my word for it. We have really great buzz and really great reviews on the website. And I'm just so grateful and humbled by the fact that so many of my friends supported me, and we managed to achieve it. And it took 10 years, but I had one friend write on Facebook like that he had been beginning to doubt that hard work could pay off, because he's been in the industry as long as I have, and he said, "You've given me hope that if you just keep persisting and putting in the hard work, that you will finally see your payoff." And so we've done it, you know, we've done it, see. The show is off Broadway, and nobody can ever take that away from us. We have gotten our show off Broadway, and hopefully it'll be there for a while. I mean, our goal is to run it for years.
So I remember sitting in senior seminar off the Infinite Corridor with Professor Harris, you and me, and we were all doing our presentation. I remember sitting in that classroom, and I remember, I think you did a presentation on Carmina Burana. I think that was your
presentation. I can't believe you remember that. Wow.
Yeah, that was your presentation. You broke that whole piece down vocally, and surprisingly, every time I hear it in a movie or commercial, whatever, I always think of you.
I had no idea. Yeah, I always think of me too.
we sang
that song in choir, and I really felt the song, the piece. We sang it in the MIT choir. I wanted to do, you know, Sondheim, but you can't, that stuff is in public. Like, you needed, you know, the paper, we had to look at the creative process of it.
Right.
He had all that stuff, but I think the museum in D.C. has it all. It's not public. So that's why I picked Carmina Burana. If I could have had access to Sondheim's early drafts, I might have done one on him. But there's actually a great book on Sondheim's music that has a bunch of it now.
But I wanted to say that, you know, it's so powerful to hear about your journey, because you talk about the relationships that you obtained when you were at the Institute at MIT, and how all these years later, it's almost been 20 years since we graduated, 20 years later, those same people are supporting you now, even in your dream. And that's really powerful, and the power of strategic relationships and friendships. And, you know, no man exists on an island. And I have to say, I take my hat off to you, because you definitely have paid your dues. You definitely deserve all the support and success in the world.
Well, thank you. You're making me cry again. But I'll tell you,
I'm a Pisces too, so I'm getting a little emotional too, because it's tough. I've been right here with you on this journey. Like, I'm just so proud of you.
My mom was always like, you know, regretting that I wasted so much of their money and took out all these loans to go to MIT. And she was like, you know, I wish you worked at Google like my friend's son who went to MIT. But now I can finally say to her, it paid off. You know, that connection and going there and making my quirky friends there, and It has really informed my life and how I do everything. If that community has been completely having my back in this journey, and I am so grateful to every one of them. I mean, it was a few people I went to high school with too, but it was the majority what is MIT grads, and they were people I didn't even know that well found out about it and contacted me, and like were totally on board, even though I was never really friends with some of these people. They're just so excited to see somebody taking the step that they know. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, right. And you know, the other thing that is so powerful about your journey, and I could think of, you know, I think of myself, I think of Lawrence Durant, AKA Dolio, in this light. You know, as creatives, people don't think of MIT alumni as creatives, but there are creatives who have a high technical aptitude that gravitate to the math and science and technology. And you're just another testament to shattering the MIT, you know, nerdy stereotype that we can't be creative, and we are creative. And it's just
so not like we went to Caltech.
Right. Right. It's not like we went to Caltech. But, you know, I know some MIT alumni who went to Caltech who are just crushing it as a tenured professors, running their own labs and doing the gosh darn thing. But you
know, I believe it.
Yeah. It's
MIT people are artists too.
Right. We are. And
our music department was phenomenal. I mean,
absolutely.
It was one of the best ones in the country.
I agree with you, because they gave us access to so much.
Yeah,
and exposed us to so much. It was powerful.
And it was the only college I got into that let me double major without a hassle. Because most colleges have music and science in two different departments. Some make you double apply, and MIT was like, of course you can double in both. Everyone does it.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I appreciated the fact that, you know, MIT, the music program was really open, unlike some universities that are very, like, I don't know exactly what they were looking for, but
yeah, exactly. That's exactly my point. Like,
right.
You have to get in both places, and then you have to really work hard to make the schedule work. And MIT was like, of course you can do it. Everyone does it. Come on in. And that's
right.
Why I went to MIT. That
exactly.
And the people.
Right.
I'm a quirky, nerdy person. I fit in with MIT perfectly.
Right, right.
And puzzling. I love puzzles.
Oh, yes. I know. Didn't you do the mystery hunt? Didn't you set it up?
Yeah, well, I've been there for the last 22 hunts. But
okay.
My team won in 2013, and we ran the hunt in 2014.
Gotcha.
And it was one of the best experiences of my life, though I never have to do it again. One time was plenty. It was a lot of work. Actually, it was really good timing. That was around my 2012 is when I had my big depression in my mid-30s after a horrible breakup and Love Quirk. That's the first time Love Quirk got solved. Then I had a breakup. Then I lost two grandparents. Then my sister got married and moved away for 2 years, and I was horrible. And then we won the mystery hunt in 2013, and that was the start of my recovery, because it gave me a reason to live again. So I think that had a tremendous effect of getting me over my horrible year, was winning the mystery hunt and having something so tangible to focus on and fill my days with for that year. So I'm grateful for that as well. But I also, of course, just had my first puzzle published in the LA Times in September. And I keep sending other ones. They keep getting rejected. But I have hope that eventually I will have another published crossword puzzle.
Oh, that's
it's
awesome.
On my list.
That's awesome.
One of these
that's
days.
Awesome.
I keep getting rejected from the New York Times. But one of these days, they're going to say, you know what? We like this one, and we'll take it.
Oh, wow. That's great. Well, Seth.
Well,
Seth, I'm super proud of you, and thank you for Thank you for stopping by the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z.
Well, thank you for having me back. I hope that people have tuned in. You can check me out at SethBH.com. That's B as in boy, H as in horse, SethBH.com. And all my social media is at SethBH.com. The dot is spelled out D-O-T. It's not a period. Sometimes people try to do that. And then the show is at LoveQuirks.com, LoveQuirks. And the show is also on social media at LoveQuirks, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Those are the only three that the show's on. That's the only three I'm on. I don't really know any of the other ones because
gotcha.
I'm old.
All right. Speak for yourself, Seth. I'm not old yet.
Yeah.
I don't claim that.
Well, every year I feel like I'm older.
Yeah.
But maybe I feel like I'm very young at heart. But then I start like arguing with millennials and I realize that there's a huge gap between Xennials and millennials, and it's where the whole generation divide is. It's very strange. That's why I talk about that on my podcast, which I'm going to be bringing back in June.
Oh, okay. You're going to be bringing it back in June. Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. The millennials are ruining the world, an Xennial perspective, bridging the gap between generations X and Y. I'm not
right.
Woke, but I'm awake. That's a catchphrase.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much. And until next time.
He just left. There is no way you are getting any.
You around tonight?
You have beautiful eyes.
Why is this so hard?
You can't get hard.
I'm always
I'm just looking
hard.
For something hard.
Can't you just try it?
I did that once. In college.
Wanna hold hands?
You what?
I don't know what
you
that
don't
means.
Either.
Love me? No, you don't.
Love quirk.
Love quirk.
Love quirk.
Love quirk. Love quirk.
Anyone you date who you think is really great and at least one twisted trait. A love quirk.
Anyone you meet who you think is really sweet probably wants to lick your feet. Such love quirk.
You can never know what a person hides from you. Hopefully you'll find it's not perverse. It's best to take it slow, but before you say it through, take a chance, it could be something worse. Love quirks creep up everywhere.
Up front or secret, they're always there.
Perfection is a myth, even if they play the fifth, everyone is saddled with some love quirks.
When true love is found, for lovers all around, kinky fetishes abound. A love quirk.
Everyone wants love and to be loved in return. Being picky just gets in the way. The more you rise above what you think you want to learn, to accept each lover's quirks is like the bay. Love quirks can be loads of fun.
We all have them, everyone.
Unavoidable disease.
Addictive obsession, esoteric,
idiosyncrasy. Before they have appeared, they're not something to be feared, for everyone has weird love quirks. Everyone plus you deserves to have a few desires that are askew. Your love quirks, try not to be shy, these are things you should pursue. Even if at times your lover cowers, please do not deny that you are kinky too. If you show us yours, then we will show you ours. Love quirks make us do strange things. They're part of the joy love brings. Even when love works, there are
David Spradley, and you're listening to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z.
Elevate your mind and spirit. Elevate your body and soul. Elevate your mind and spirit. Elevate your body.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.